Hi everyone, I'm Adrienne and I'm here with...
Hi, my name is Glenn Barrett. I'm the OIM on board the Geordies Resolution. So I'm having this interview and conversation with Adrienne as my opinions and my beliefs and the knowledge that I have. I'm in no way representing C1 in this interview. I'm speaking as an OIM and as a person.
And we are currently doing this interview on the JR. We're currently sitting at 76 degrees latitude and about 12 degrees longitude, and we just finished drilling off the southwest coast of Svalbard. So to put this into more context, we are currently on the ship on Expedition 403, and we're drilling in the eastern Fram Strait, trying to reconstruct the history of the ice sheets through the last about 2 million years or so. And we've gone back a little deeper in time as well. But the important part is, we just finished drilling the last core that the Geordies Resolution may ever drill, ever. And that's because US funding bodies and our international partners have chosen not to fund this program anymore. So the point of this interview is to give you all a little more background, not about what will be lost with respect to science when the Geordies Resolution is no longer sailing and the program is no longer funded, but rather to give you some insight from the C1 side of things. And C1 are the owners of the Geordies Resolution right now. So I am an assistant professor, and I'm also the co-president and co-creator of Time Scavengers, a 501c3 nonprofit. So we've done some interviews before, but I'm really excited for this one. And Glenn, do you wanna tell everyone a little bit more about what you do and
sure.
your responsibilities?
Sure, my name's Glenn Barrett. As you can probably tell from my accent, I'm an Australian national. I am the drilling operations manager on board the vessel. So I look after the day-to-day operation, the drilling operation on the Geordies Resolution. NSF and their partners under the banner of IODP are our clients. We have a team of approximately 25 scientists or so every 2 months come on board the vessel. We sail to different parts of the world collecting cores from the seafloor and beyond. They tell us what they want and where it is, and then it's my job to organise the vessel to get them that material safely and efficiently within the 2 month window that they have to do that.
So I think one of the coolest things you've told me about your position is that when we're drilling, I mean, obviously there's a captain on the ship, Jake.
Yes, there is.
But when we're drilling, you then become in charge, right?
Yeah, obviously the captain is still legally responsible for, you know, keeping the vessel safe and out of shipping lanes, etc. But we are a drilling vessel, we are a drill ship. So everybody on board is focused in that direction. So while we're drilling, all the other departments basically report to me each day, just to make sure that we have no conflicting operations. Any equipment that goes down that's going to affect the operation, I need to know about. So I basically the whole of ship coordinator whilst we're in drilling mode.
And how long have you worked for C1?
I've been on the JR for 9 years now, or about a month short of 9 years. Prior to that, I worked in oil and gas for quite a few years on both sides of that industry, both the rig owner side and the oil company side.
Perfect.
I have a degree in petroleum engineering.
That's pretty cool. So you know a lot about ships, obviously.
Yeah, I even had a past life in the Royal Australian Navy, so I have spent a lot of my adult life at sea.
That's awesome.
And away from my family, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is true.
That's the life I choose.
This is fair. So tell us a little bit about the JR, a lot about the technical side of the JR.
Okay, so the JR was built in 1978, or completed in 1978, which makes it a generation one and a half, generation two drill ship. The different generations of drilling rig are really dependent on the time frame that they were built in, and that is a reflection on the technology that they use, how much they can hoist, which is how deep they can drill. So it's basically a technological line of demarcation. So the rig's currently being built today, generation 8. So we're a generation 2 drill ship, 1978. This ship started life as a hydrocarbon rig, an oil and gas rig, working for companies like BP all over the world. And then in 1973, I believe, she was had some work done and converted and purchased by new owners. And I believe it was 1985 she went to work for the previous incarnation of IODP, working for science, and has worked for science ever since. So coming up on 40 years of drilling for science, with a small break here and there as programs changed, but basically continuing, continuously working with the science community around the world for the last 40 years.
So just to kind of put this into context for everyone, there's no Gen 2 ships that you're aware of sailing?
No, there's no Generation 2 drill ships left working in the world. We're the last one. Most of our equipment is antiquated and old to the point of us not being able to source spares off the shelf, so to speak. So some of our larger items, if they break or need repairing, we have to have parts custom made. There are, as far as I'm aware, there are no Generation 3 or Generation 4 drill ships left working in the world either. So we really are unique, not only in the work that we do, but in the age and the type of the vessel. I often joke to family and friends and scientists that sail out here that we are a Model T Ford sailing around the world's oceans doing precision science work.
That's wild. That is too wild. So I want to address this head on. There's been this incredible misconception that the JOIDES Resolution is retiring and it can no longer sail after 2028. And this is something that personally, as an early career scientist, when I've attended meetings and we're talking about the future of the program and the future of the International Ocean Discovery Program and the JOIDES Resolution and what it will look like, is something I hear a lot. And we also hear it's retiring because C1 is saying the ship is too old. Can you touch on that a little bit and talk a little bit about that?
The JOIDES Resolution is not retiring. The program, the work it currently does for the IODP program, it's an end of a contract, and for whatever reason, political reasons, they've decided not to extend that contract. So the JOIDES Resolution is not retiring. CM Offshore, who are now called C1 Offshore, we've recently had a new owner step in and take the reins. The ship has just come out of its 5-yearly, what they call a survey, a dry docking. Mm. We've been given a clean bill of health to carry on for the next 5 years. We're seaworthy. The insurance companies are happy to continue to insure us. It's a process just like having your car checked for being re-registered.
Right.
So we're good to go for at least another 5 years. We wouldn't have gone through the process and the millions of dollars we spent having the ship recertified for another 5 years if we were going to retire it. So. Mm-hmm. The JR is very much open for business, and the JR can indeed work beyond 2028. Mm-hmm. There is an environmental case that we work under as part of the IODP banner. That is not a burden borne by us, that is a burden borne by the program. Mm-hmm. So if the American government, through NSF and then through a program like IODP, wanted to hire us again in the future, then they have to provide an environmental case under US law to satisfy Congress that they're working safely within the environment. Mm-hmm. The environmental case running out in 2028 will not stop the JR from working.
It'll just stop the JR from working for the US.
For the US, yeah.
US
and it's not a black and white thing. A new environmental case can be conducted and ratified, I'm mm-hmm. sure, mm-hmm. For want of a better word. It's just a timely process and takes a bit of will. But there is nothing, I can't see anything happening between now and 2028 that would stop us doing what we do today, and that's coring for science.
So the ship is old, so perhaps there may be some changes that would need to be made. We've talked before about maybe the exhaust would need to be fixed, perhaps. Or other things like that.
Yeah, for a new environmental case, there may be some things just like that. You know, perhaps mm-hmm. it's noise, perhaps it's pollution. But you know, that would simply mean we just upgrade the vessel. Mm-hmm. And if that's, if they want to continue to use the vessel and they're willing to, our company is willing to put those funds in for a continuation of contract, there's nothing to say that that can't happen.
So C1 would be very supportive of that.
I believe so, yeah. I can't see why not.
Right.
We've done it in the past with the JR. The JR has had refits in the past to bring it up to the current spec that it is.
Right.
And I can't see why that couldn't continue.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. So if the US and our funding agencies decide not to fund this ship, C1 isn't going to continue sailing it, right? It seems like it's just too much of a cost and too much of a burden to them.
Yeah, and it's not that it's a burden. We're a highly specialized vessel. There's nothing else that we can go and do.
Mm-hmm.
The ship really has, over the last 40 years, been fine-tuned and honed to drill for science.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, any upgrades or anything that we would need to have done to go and drill and stay as an oil and gas rig,
right,
is beyond us now. It's the expense to, you know, change horses midstream, so to speak, is just too great. It would be the cost of a new vessel, just not worth it.
Right.
But yeah, so it's basically the fact that we're so highly specialized, and you know, we're a commercial venture. C1 Offshore is a company just like any other. And if you have an asset that is costing you money and not making you money, especially when the vessel is so old, the chance of selling it on and anyone else wanting to purchase it is low,
right,
simply because of its age and its specialization. There's not really much that it can be used for without some major reconstruction.
Yeah.
And it's just not financially viable to do that, I'm sure.
So if the funding doesn't come through, either from the US and or our international partners, what will happen to the ship?
The JR will be scrapped. Mm. Our new owners have made it quite clear that, you know, if we don't have a contract by early next year, then the vessel will be scrapped.
And what does that mean specifically?
A company somewhere around the world that specializes in scrap metal will purchase the rights to the vessel. The vessel will be sailed to wherever their facility is, in Turkey or India or Burma or West Africa, and a workforce of 1,000 welders with cutting torches and plasma torches will cut the JR up into small pieces of steel that will then be turned into something else.
Yeah, which is pretty heartbreaking because the ship is so specialized.
Yeah, and it's achieved so much too. It has such an amazing history. It's done some amazing work. Behind the scenes too, there's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the general public don't really know about the JR, but the stuff that the JR has achieved over its years, it probably affects their day-to-day life in some way or another.
Oh, for sure. One of the reasons we know about climate change on such long timescales is because of the ship.
And drilling programs that preceded the JR, you know, that's our understanding of plate tectonics was confirmed by some of those first cores taken by Challenger, the predecessor of this vessel.
Exactly. So we've talked about this before as well, but C1, they already have plans drawn up for a new drill ship.
Yeah, in 2018, 2019, obviously with the age of the vessel, we were asked to put together plans for a potential replacement vessel for the JR. And that process was carried all the way through, from what I understand. There are technical drawings. The drilling package was put out to tender, so a couple of companies bid for that work.
Mm-hmm.
I understand different propulsion systems were investigated, including hybrid systems. So from what I understand, we got to a point where it simply meant, you know, a couple of signatures on some paper and we probably could have started.
Wow.
The sticking point was that to build such a specialized vessel would have cost somewhere between $300 and $500 million,
right,
and for it to be worth our time financially, to, you know, to be able to pay for the vessel, we would have needed a 10-year contract, and the US government or NSF, it's not in their charter to be able to give contracts of that length. So,
right,
it just simply never happened.
Yeah,
died on someone's office floor somewhere. Obviously, all that planning and still exists. The drawings for the vessel still exist somewhere on a hard drive. They're quite detailed.
Right.
And there's no reason that vessel can't be built in the future.
You mentioned a drilling package. Can you explain what that is?
So the drilling package is everything in the middle of the vessel that physically contributes to the drilling into the seafloor. Everything from the derrick to the drilling machine, which we call a top drive.
Right.
Draw works, which is the hoist that pulls the pipe in and out of the ground. Mm. Mud pumps, all of that would be considered the drilling package.
And that there can't be that many companies around the world that make that, right?
There are a handful of major players. Mm-hmm. There's probably two or three major players and then probably four or five on the periphery.
Oh, that's more than I was thinking. Yeah. That's awesome. So just to be clear, C1 would pay for that new ship.
It would be owned by C1.
Right.
It would be built by
C1. Right.
But obviously, they're not going to take the gamble on buying a vessel, building a vessel that's so specialized if they don't have a client for it.
Right.
And like I said, it's a considerable expense.
Yeah.
And that cost would need to be recouped over, a 10-year period.
Yep.
Or whatever. But our company felt that a 10-year contract they'd be comfortable building and investing in a new vessel for a 10-year contract.
And all we need are the signatures from the U.S.
Yeah.
It's wild. So we've also talked a lot about, well, I should back up. There has been some momentum in the U.S., and I've heard about this too, where we're forming new committees in the science community to think about a new drill ship that the U.S. would build and sail. But you have a lot of experience with ships. You've been in this business a long time. You've touched on why it wouldn't be effective for the U.S. to build their own ship. And we've talked about things like, what is it, the law?
There's a number of stumbling blocks.
There's
the Jones Act, which would make any program in the future prohibitively expensive to man. Mm-hmm. And the Jones Act is a fantastic piece of legislation that was designed to protect American shipping. But one of the parts of the act is that any vessel that's American-owned and American-built must be American-manned.
Right.
So the entire crew would need to be U.S. nationals, and those U.S. nationals would probably demand U.S. salaries, and that becomes a very expensive exercise to operate a vessel with 100 American sailors day-to-day.
Yeah, and the U.S. is already behind a little bit in maintaining.
Yeah, so the other pieces of this puzzle, it's not just the Jones Act, but American shipbuilding is many years behind in many regards, and I don't mean technologically. The U.S. Navy is behind with their new frigate program. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Coast Guard is behind with their icebreaker program.
Oh, wow.
The U.S. Navy is behind with their submarine program. Mm-hmm. All of these vessels are behind because of construction delays or not enough dry dock space to build the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't see the U.S. government doesn't have a particularly good track record in recent history of getting ships in and out of dry dock on time and certainly on budget.
Right.
And that's just down to, I guess over the years, the American shipping industry has just kind of dropped off a little. Companies prefer to build their vessels in other parts of the world. It's cheaper to do.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore there hasn't been the demand from the commercial side. There's only really a demand in the US for major vessels on the military side.
Right.
And being that, the military is part of the government process, the wheels of bureaucracy turn quite slowly.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, I just couldn't see it happening. I could see it being a vessel that was, 5 or 10 years late and cost 3 times more than it was supposed to in the beginning.
Right.
If it ever was undertaken at all.
Yeah, that seems like a big F at this point.
Yeah.
Which is fortunate.
And basically, it kind of circles back to the Jones Act again, where if it's going to be a U.S. government owned vessel, it must be built in the U.S.
Right.
There are shipyards around the world who pump out oil and gas rigs every day Mm-hmm. That's what they specialize in. They could build a replacement for the JR in probably two and a half years. And it would probably be on budget too.
Right.
But that's simply not a palatable option for the US government to outsource stuff to a foreign nation.
And there are ports around the world and in international waters and countries that have their, you know, exclusion zones and such, where ships have to meet a certain standard, right?
Yeah, so there are certain safety standards and the construction of the vehicle, their emission, the ship,
mm-hmm.
and emissions, etc. There's international organisations like the IMO who insist on a certain standard. The American shipping industry under the Jones Act doesn't necessarily need to meet all of those standards.
Right.
And that's another reason the American industry is in decline a little too, because if you're a ship owner and you build your vessel in the US to those standards,
mm-hmm.
You can only really use it in the US. You know, if you want to sell your vessel on, you don't have a worldwide market to sell your vessel because you don't meet the worldwide standard. That's not the case with all ships that are built in the US, but there are a lot of sort of coastal freighters and smaller vessels that only have to meet a certain standard within the US, and that is not as high a standard as the rest of the world.
And the world really needs, well, the US especially really needs another riserless drillship that can do international drilling and go to international ports, so that is a huge concern for the science community
It's a very specialized piece of equipment. Like I said, even if the US did decide to build this drillship
mm-hmm.
To replace the JR, there are shipyards around the world that specialize in building drillships. They have designs, they have templates, they have jigs, all ready to go.
Right.
It wouldn't be a clean sheet design, so to speak. So there's not the cost of tooling up. There's not the cost of making mistakes and having to redo stuff. So it's just cheaper to build them.
So in other words, we wouldn't have to start from the ground up with a new ship.
Oh, of course not. No.
Amazing. Yeah. So one of the other things I want to touch on is what we're losing if the Joint Resolution is not funded past 2028 or for additional years to come. So you mentioned that this ship has been sailing for a long time, at least 40 years. We've got equipment on ship that really can't be, you can't buy it anywhere. If something breaks, you really have to machine it. I mean, we have machinists that sail with us, welders,
yep.
people that have expertise. So if the ship is does get scrapped, can you talk a little about like the equipment that's lost on the ship, or like even if we were to pause drilling for a little bit and then the ship was funded later, like there's drills on the ship that we can only source from one person right now. Can you discuss a little bit about that?
It all comes back to being a unique program.
Mm-hmm.
The parts that we use, we're a small concern, so you know, there's not many companies around that. There's a lot of companies around the world who build drill bits for oil and gas rigs, but
right.
Our rigs are very specific. Our drill bits are very specific to the work we do, and it's just not a big enough account for large companies to worry about. So,
right.
you know, we have one supplier for our drill bits at the moment in Australia who's happy to work with us.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose that supplier because we go inoperable for 6 months or 12 months, we may not get them back. They may get busy with other work and decide that we're not worth their time. So
right.
then we have to source other vendors. And that's just for the drill bits. There are many pieces of the coring system which are, again, one-off specific to this ship, not right. used anywhere else. We have our piston coring system, which no one else uses. There is another vessel that has worked for the program over the years called the Chikyu.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little more advanced than us. And they use an evolution of our coring system. But there's enough parts that are different for them not necessarily to be compatible
right.
for us to purchase from the same vendor. It just becomes, if we lay the vessel up, some of this equipment may not start again, or it may just need a total overhaul. The cost of restarting the vessel
mm-hmm.
rather than just keeping it going would be great, I think.
Yeah,
it would be a lot.
And even more than the equipment that would be lost or vendors that would be lost, there's also the loss of expertise from the worker side, from the people side, right?
Yeah. So again, we're the only ship that does this this work. So we're the only workforce that does this work. Mm. It's not magic. It's not brain surgery. But to lose all the experience on board would take years to get back. Right. You could get a brand new crew and put them on here, mm-hmm. But you wouldn't get quality core. You wouldn't get consistent core. You might damage equipment along the way. You might injure people along the way.
Right.
While you discover the easy and the hard way to do things all over again with an entirely new crew starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. The people who have been on here have been here a long time. All the wrinkles have been ironed out. But on the drilling side of it, my department, most of the guys that work for me came from oil and gas, mm-hmm. and they will go back to oil and gas. We've all been given our termination notices effectively. Mm. When we all get off the rig here on the 2nd and crew change, that will be the last time we come back to the rig.
It's heartbreaking.
And they will all go and get jobs elsewhere.
Yeah.
In oil and gas, probably. Mm-hmm. Those jobs will probably pay better. Mm-hmm. So even if the vessel starts up again next year, there's a good chance you won't get that expertise back. That knowledge, that institutional knowledge will be lost. We have drawings for all the equipment and there are procedures, but it's those little tweaks and, oh, this works better, that works better. Oh, we've encountered this problem before and we did this to fix it. Mm-hmm. It's all those little day-to-day things that you lose. It would take a few years to get the program back on track if you lost the expertise of the crew.
Exactly. Yeah. Seems like a major loss too, especially since they've been here for so long. So you mentioned that when you get off the ship, these folks, again, they're losing their jobs too. Like, it seems like the Joyges is their second home. They're away from home for 2 months at a time.
Yep.
And
so as a crew, we sail 2 months on and then 2 months at home. Mm-hmm. But then there's travel time between that, which is not part of expedition time. So we literally spend less than half of the year at home with our families.
Wow.
So this becomes our home for half the year. Mm-hmm. And the people on board become our families for half the year. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, in a sense, I guess you could say you're also breaking up a family of people too.
Yep.
So it's a little sad to think of it like that, but you're losing a lot of experience, most of which you probably just will not get back.
No.
And you're losing the cohesion and the bond of that crew working together and everyone knowing everyone's strengths and weaknesses and working toward that and around that and with that. Mm-hmm. As a team, as a well-oiled team.
I was going to say, the ship is a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, it
but
is.
But also, the team here is also a well-oiled machine.
Absolutely.
And they get us the cores, they get us the data, and they're damn good at what they do.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And, you know, like I said, everyone knows each other's strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. so any slack gets picked up by someone else, and then that's complemented by someone else's skills, and the whole operation runs seamlessly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
It's really great. So, of course, this is a huge loss to the scientific ocean drilling community. The loss of this ship, the loss of this program. It's a huge loss to the United States, of course, too, because this is like the program where American taxpayer dollars are going into at least more than half of the program to fund our science. And climate change has been deemed one of the major kind of threats to the United States and to the world recently by our government, which is a big deal. And the Joyges resolution is, well, right now, one of the only ways that we can get records from in the deep ocean, but also way below the seafloor. So we're really hoping that we can have other kind of vessels to sail in the future, or maybe use other types of platforms. But the Chinese have kind of beat us to that, right? They've already built this ship. Can you speak a little bit about their ship that they built?
Yeah, so the Chinese have built they built a new ship, a new coring vessel that is riserless, as we are, mm-hmm. But it's also riser capable. So it's positioned somewhere between the JR and the Japanese drill ship called the Chikyu. It's brand new. It has more hoisting capacity than we do, mm-hmm. so it can drill deeper, mm-hmm. Not just in deeper oceans, but deeper into the earth.
Wow.
Much newer technology, so it can do it faster, cheaper, deeper. Mm-hmm. Cheaper for deeper, as we would say in oil and gas.
Yeah.
And it really is very much the vessel that we pitched to NSF in 2018, 2019. Mm-hmm. There's pictures of it all over the internet now. I believe it's done its sea trials and it's even done its first mini expedition. So they'll probably spend a year or two ironing out the kinks and getting their processes right. But they haven't done it half-heartedly. From all the pictures I've seen and all the people I've spoken to in my circle of industry and professional friends, it's very well equipped with a Western drill, a very Western drill package from a company called NOV.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't made all their own stuff in house. They've gone and sourced the best equipment from all over the world.
Wow.
And they really seem to have the vessel that will take the lead in this space. The US has had the lead in this scientific space for the last 40 years or more. Beyond that, it was the US that started ocean coring.
It's true. Yeah.
Without a US-led program and a vessel of the JR's capability or better, I'm sure once the Chinese have got their program up and going, they'll invite the rest of the world to come and join them, and I guess they'll take over the mantle.
Yeah, seems like they're well on their way.
Potentially for the next 40 years, it's definitely the kind of vessel that is capable of going for decades.
And pushing our science forward.
Yeah.
From their side, which is great.
Which is great for science.
It is.
I'm not so sure the American government or the American public want the Chinese to be leading the world in a scientific field that they've led for the last 40 years.
Exactly.
Or more.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, Glenn, thank you so much for
It's been a pleasure.
And information. And thank you all for listening.